This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Conducting clinical trials in the European Union will drastically change when the new clinical trial regulation comes into force in 2019. This new regulation harmonizes the assessment and supervision processes for clinical trials throughout the European Union via an EU portal and database set up and maintained by the European Medicines Agency in collaboration with the Member States and the European Commission. To help professionals in the European Union prepare for these changes, DIA offers a European Union Clinical Trial Regulation Conference in December 2017. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. I am joined today by Mr. Nick Sykes, Senior Director of Worldwide Safety and Regulatory at Pfizer in the UK, who chairs this conference, and by Dr. Elke Stahl, co-chair of the Clinical Trial Facilitation Group and preclinical assessor for the Clinical Trial Unit at the Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices in Germany, the BfArM, who also serves on the Conference Program Committee. Thank you both for joining us today to discuss this very important topic, and welcome.
Thank you.
Let me ask Dr. Stahl first, as a regulator, what are the biggest conceptual changes to clinical trials that are introduced by this new regulation, changes for sponsors and for regulators?
I think it's just a big step forward because with the new upcoming regulation, we'll have, I call it always a matter of one. We'll have one set of documents, one new communication hoop, and therefore you have one contact as a sponsor. And on the other side, you will only have from now on one approval per member state. So not two as you have now from the ethics committees and from the national competent authorities. So I think it's a big change from this side of view.
Nick Sykes, from the industry perspective, how do you view these conceptual changes?
Yeah, I would agree with what Dr. Stahl said. Three key ones I would come up with as being the key conceptual changes are there is a single submission as opposed to a dual submission that we have at the moment, and also submissions, multiple submissions per member state. There will be, you know, if you're lucky, one approval per member state as opposed to, again, a dual approval system in each member state, one from the regulatory authorities and one from the ethics committees. But the other one as well is the concept of a coordinated assessment for the scientific, technical and ethical parts of the clinical trials application. And I think that concept is actually a really great way of utilizing the expertise from across Europe to assess our application.
Is a coordinated assessment possible, feasible, relatively easy to envision and implement from where you stand?
The regulators themselves have been doing this coordinated assessment approach for a number of years through the voluntary harmonization procedure, integrating the ethics approvals or the ethics review within this coordinated assessment. I think maybe a bit of a challenge in some member states, but I have no doubt that those member states will achieve that and make the regulation a success.
Dr. Stahl, from your point of view as a regulator, are these changes in coordinated reviews or assessments going to be fairly easy to implement? Would you agree with that view, or do you have a different view?
To some extent, I think this Dr. Sykes said it's really a long experience, a couple of years of experiences with this voluntary harmonization procedure where we work multinational on the so-called part one documents together with the other member states. We also have a VHP plus where the ethics are already involved in this assessment, but these are only so far 20% of all multinational clinical trials. So the challenge is not the procedure per se, but the challenge will be the upscale to 100% and to involve all member states a bit more than at the moment.
You mentioned multinational clinical trials. If a trial is going to be conducted in only one member state, does anything change for a sponsor company or for the regulatory framework?
Oh, if you have a mononational clinical trial, it will change because you will have just only one submission too. So similar to the multinational clinical trial, at the moment you have to have two to the ethics as well as to the national competent authorities. So in future you will just have one submission and one approval. But here you don't have this multinational coordination. You just have the national coordination.
This leads us naturally into the practical changes that will be basically generated by the new clinical trial regulation. So what are some practical aspects, in addition to the ones you've already mentioned, that sponsors and regulators will need to make as a result of this regulation?
As for the regulators, I think there will be a huge reorganization of the workflows and processes. And especially for the ethics committees, and because we have to have a lot of interaction and coordination, cooperation before approval is done.
Is this a new relationship that needs to happen between the regulators and the ethics committees? Is this novel in some way?
It's a closer relationship. We are, at least in our country, we have an amount of exchange between ethics and NCAs frequently, but it will be closer, yeah.
And in other countries, do you have a sense of how it might occur in other countries? And I'm speaking about the relationship between the local regulatory authority and the local ethic committee or committees. Is there a concern that in some countries that relationship is not quite as advanced, perhaps, as it is in Germany? And what might that cause?
I can't talk for the other member states. My impression is that we all have to work closer than we do at the moment, maybe. We are not as independent with regard to timelines, etc., as we are at the moment, but it shouldn't be a problem.
When speaking of the communication and relationships between the regulators and the ethics committees, how will that communication occur? Will it be email? Will it be teleconferences, other forms of communication? In practice, how will this occur?
Actually, some member states already have very centralized more ethics committees, and the exchange will be sent with this coordination ethics committee, and therefore there will be identified spots how the communication will take place. Unfortunately, this is not foreseen in the portal which is now developed, and therefore the member states itself have to take care of this. And that's why a couple of member states most likely need a national cooperation system for this exchange.
Mr. Sykes, your perspective on practical changes, maybe from the sponsor's point of view.
From a sponsor point of view, the specific practical changes that sponsors may need to take, I think, will be very much dependent upon the way that sponsor approaches the way that it manages clinical trials. As you can imagine, certainly from a large company perspective, you know, we have a different approach to managing clinical trials to other companies. And even different clinical trials that we run, we may take a different approach depending on the strategy we want to plan. From my conversations with colleagues across the industry, most companies and most sponsors themselves are in the process of evaluating what changes they need to make. And I think the DIA conference will help showcase some of those approaches. Overall, though, I think the key things that most companies will need to do is really plan out how they're going to make the documentation for these clinical trial applications available, particularly as regards a single submission. In regard to the part two documents, which are the country-specific documents, ensuring that at the time of submission, you've got the different languages available. Otherwise, the single submission needs to be made is not going to be feasible for many sponsors. I think also many sponsors are going to need to understand how to interact with the new EU portal and database and really get to grips with the requirements of that database, because that is going to be the main means of communication between the applicants and the member states. And I think as well, sponsors are going to need to really be prepared to provide more information on the status of an ongoing trial. There's a requirement from the clinical trials regulation for regular notifications through the Portland database on various statuses of the trial as it's going through the process from start to finish. So I think those three are probably three key practical changes that most sponsors will find. There will be other ones that companies will identify as they conduct their own evaluation of their current processes.
You both mentioned the roles of the member states. So I wanted to ask you, are these roles going to change as a result of this regulation? And if so, how, beyond what you have already said? Dr. Stahl, perhaps your perspective?
I think the roles and the responsibilities, at least not with regard to the approval of a clinical trial. Approval and supervision of a clinical trial is always relies on the member state itself. So each member state has to approve a clinical trial. And also for the supervision during the life cycle of a clinical trial. Nevertheless, the member states could have a different role while assessing a clinical trial. It could be a reporting member state or it could be a member state concerned. But how they will change their role here and the responsibilities, I think that is depending on the member state itself, because even if you have a reporting member state, all the member states concerned could always comment considerations which have to be taken up or commented, at least taken up by the reporting member states. So to some extent, it may change, but the final responsibilities rely on the member states as it is today.
During the conduct of the clinical trial, will communications between the regulatory authority and the local ethics committee be more intensive than they have been in the past before the regulation comes into effect? Will there be more ongoing dialogue between the authority of the member state and the local ethics committee during the conduct of the trial?
I think there will be an exchange if you have a substantial modification or if there's a notification or one of the notifications which relate to safety, then there will be most likely an interaction between both bodies. Maybe more frequent as it is today, because today we inform each other if something is important and needs action, and now it most likely be more on a continuous basis if something is to be assessed.
Mr. Sykes, your perspective on the roles and responsibilities of the member states?
Well, I think as Elke Stahl said, the regulation does not bring or does not change the basis for approval of a clinical trial application. The basis that we've got today under the EU Clinical Trial Directive remains exactly the same. So in terms of what is being assessed as regards your clinical trial application, that will not change. You know, the key premise is protection of subjects that participate in the trial and ensuring that the data that is obtained from the trial is of high quality. If the trial is not going to produce high quality data that helps advance science, helps decision making, then what is the value of running the trial? So there is no change in the basis for the assessment that member states will be taking. As Elke referred to, the roles that member states take may have a change the operational roles, but certainly not what they are actually looking for.
Let me ask you a bit of a delicate question, if I may. The implementation of this new clinical trial regulation has been delayed, as we all know, again and again, due to practical issues such as the readiness of the EU portal and database. Have these issues now been resolved? And I ask that because companies will want to know if they can now definitely plan on implementation of the regulation in 2019, or will there be a further delay? Dr. Stahl?
The European Medicine Agency is responsible for developing the EU portal and database, and that would be a good question up to them. As we are aware of from our meetings, we know that there are some good progress, but we don't know about the timeline, so we'll see.
Do you know if there will be training, webinars, training tools that sponsors can use to learn how to use the database and the portal?
As I'm aware, they're planning for a huge set of webinars and training material. So this should all be fine later on. Yeah.
Mr. Sykes, from the industry perspective, how do you view the road to 2019? Is it now pretty well defined and decided, or is industry maybe still concerned?
From our interactions with the EMA towards the development of the portal and database, which have been, you know, relatively frequent, and the EMA should be commended for how they've involved all the stakeholders in the development of the portal and database. From those interactions, we feel reasonably confident that the 2019 date will be met, but really only the EMA can answer that question. We are aware that there is some user testing coming up in the next month or so, and EMA have said that the output from that user testing will help shape and help define really the date that they are looking towards being able to make the regulation implemented. If they find significant issues from the user testing, then that may lead them to require a further analysis of the strategy that they're putting in place to develop this portal and database. I think as well, we shouldn't underestimate the potential impact that a relocation of the agency will have. Hopefully it won't have an impact on the development of the portal and the database, the implementation of the regulation, but only time will tell on that one, I think.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that was on my mind as well. 2019 is not only the launch of the regulation, but also the implementation of Brexit and the move of the European Medicines Agency to another country to be defined. Should we expect disruption on many fronts, including the implementation of this regulation as a result of the agency moving?
At the moment, it's difficult to determine. From the messages that we receive from the agency itself, they clearly have a challenge as regards staff retention if certain countries or certain locations are chosen. If the worst happens and they do lose a substantial proportion of their current staff, undoubtedly it must have an impact on the ability of the agency to meet its obligations. And therefore, the agency itself will need to really look at and identify what are its priority deliverables, whether the portal and the database sits as being the top priority or at a lower level in their prioritized list. Again, that's down for the agency to determine based upon what they know in terms of their own relocation.
Dr. Stahl, from the viewpoint of a member state authority like the BfArM, is there a plan B if EMA is somehow disrupted due to their move? Is there a way that the other member states can sort of fill in and continue to approve clinical trials and make sure clinical trials proceed almost regardless of any disruption within EMA?
I think clinical trials are approved by a member state and therefore they should not have an impact on a clinical trial running in the countries, as of my opinion. But sure, I think all member states are aware that there could be a worst case and there could be a best case and they get prepared for it.
Finally, I would like to ask you both, what are the major ideas or information that you hope the attendees at this DIA conference will take away and bring back to their places of work in relation to the clinical trial regulation?
I consider there to be two key things I'd like participants to be taking away and hoping to get from the conference. One is really to understand ways that they can help themselves or their own organizations prepare for the implementation and beyond. So it's not just about implementation of the regulation, but then it's making it work in practice in the longer term. And they can achieve that by hearing approaches that are being taken by other organizations, which is a key part of our program. I think the second area is also will enable participants to recognize some of the key unknowns or some of the key issues that still need to be resolved or answered before we reach implementation and therefore before all decisions about implementation can be made. If people get those two as two takeaways from the conference, then I'll be really happy.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Stahl, from your perspective, what are some key takeaways from the conference?
Oh, actually pretty similar. I think they should get a good idea what is the status of the implementation, how ready are the different stakeholders are, what are the challenges and how they get addressed by some organizations. So these are the messages to take home and how they could be improved in your own organization and put forward.
Well, our time is up, so we'll close our conversation. I want to thank you both very much for your time and the insights today, Dr. Stahl, Mr. Sykes, and thank you really for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.